Space, the final frontier. This is the Observer's Notebook, the official podcast of the Association of Lunar and Planetary Observers. Its mission to explore the solar system, to seek out new observations and data, to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. And now the host of the Observer's Notebook, Tim Robertson.
Hello and welcome to episode 184 of the Observer's Notebook, the official podcast of the Association of Lunar and Planetary Observers. I'm Tim Robertson, the host of the Observer's Notebook, and also the coordinator of the training program within the ALPO. Thank you for downloading and listening. The Association of Lunar and Planetary Observers collects and analyzes observations of various solar system bodies and associated phenomena, and publishes detailed reports concerning these bodies in its quarterly publication, the Journal of the Association of Lunar and Planetary Observers, also known as the Strolling Astronomer. This podcast depends upon donations from you, our listeners, to keep it going. If you enjoy what you hear on the podcast, you can donate to it via Patreon by starting off at $1 a month. If you feel even more generous, for $5, you receive early access to the podcast before it goes public. For a monthly donation of $10, you receive a copy of the Novice Observer's Handbook. And for $35 a month, you receive producer credits on the podcast. You can find out more by going to www.patreon.com/observersnotebook. If you'd like to join the ALPO, membership begins at only $22 a year. You can find out more at www.alpo-astronomy.org. And we're also on Facebook. Just search for ALPO Astronomy. And this podcast also has a Facebook page as well. Just search for Observer's Notebook. And if you enjoy what you hear in the podcast, please subscribe. That way you'll never miss another episode. And now, episode 184 of the Observer's Notebook. And we're going to talk about a brand new telescope out called the C-Star with ALPO member Greg Chanos. Enjoy. All right, I'd like to welcome everybody back to this edition of the Observer's Notebook podcast. Today we have a special guest on the podcast today, Greg Chanos. Welcome to the podcast, Greg.
Hi, Tim. Glad to be here.
Yeah, now you're a member of the ALPO.
Yes.
What are your areas of interest within the organization?
All the planets. Whatever planet's out is my favorite planet at the time.
Okay. Are you a visual observer, an astrophotographer? How would you describe yourself?
Well, I became interested in astronomy in 1986 when Halley's Comet came.
Okay.
And so I was living in Rhode Island then, and I went to Skyscrapers, the Astronomical Society of Rhode Island, and I knew nothing about astronomy, and I saw these beautiful Schmidt-Cassegrain telescopes. And that's the kind of telescope I want.
There you go.
Yeah. I like those better than refractors and Dobsonians, mm-hmm. And so I just got into it from there, and I never stopped, and now I've been mostly visual, but mm-hmm. now that, astrophotography has gotten a lot less expensive and much more doable. I've gotten into that more. Mm-hmm. So,
okay. Yeah. And interesting you say astrophotography has gotten more inexpensive, because that's the topic we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
You recently purchased, as did I, the new C-Star S50 smart yes. telescope. So right. Why don't you give us a little bit of background of what a smart telescope is?
All right. Smart telescope is kind of an all-in-one. It's a telescope, and it's a camera, and it's totally computerized, and it's run by your iPhone or Android or iPad. And there's no eyepiece to look through. Mm-hmm. And they first came out a few years ago, and it was very expensive. The mm-hmm. price was $5,000. And that, I think, is beyond the budget of most amateur yeah. astronomers, And actually, amateur astronomer, I like the term citizen scientist better. Astronomer. But we just call ourselves amateur astronomers. But either way, It was too expensive. I was looking at the different models, and then they dropped down to 2,500, and that's how much I paid for my Meade LX200 GPS 10-inch that I used for planetary back in 2004. So, and then all of a sudden, I learned through the St. Petersburg Astronomy Club in the newsletter, one of the members wrote an article on the Dwarf 2. And I'm like, what is this? And it was a smart telescope for only $499. So I was like, whoa, this is incredible. So it's not 5,000, it's 10% the price. It's 500, So I was looking into it, and then I found that ZWO was coming out. It wasn't out yet, but is coming out with this C star. And so I didn't buy the Dwarf 2. I waited for the C star because all the cameras I use for planetary imaging are ZWO cameras.
Yeah, and
So
that's the thing. That's what brought me to it, is because the optics and the camera itself. I mean, any good astrophotographer uses a ZWO camera, and
exactly.
that's who's manufacturing this telescope. So that got my that piqued my interest too.
So you know the company and you know it's good from the cameras. And so I waited, and I remember I purchased it in April, and they even had a an introductory special $399
Oh
instead of
my.
$499. So I got it for $400,
Wow.
and the average ZWO camera is about 300, so I paid $100 more than a
That's true.
ZWO camera
Yeah, I paid the
for all the
49.
telescope.
I ordered mine in August, and I got it in November.
Yeah, I ordered mine in April, and I got it in October. I went out west to see the in Utah to see the annular eclipse, and once I got home, I got an email and said they shipped it out. So I'm like, oh my God, good timing.
Yeah, very good.
So the smart scopes, it's all in one. It's a telescope and a camera together, and you run it through your smartphone or iPad, and the prices have gone really down. So the thing I like about the ZWO is the fact that so once I got it, it was pretty easy to learn how to use it. It's not that difficult. I was afraid, oh my God, it's going to be this huge learning curve. And there really wasn't. It was a very minor learning curve. And there are a myriad of YouTube videos out there on how to use it and how to, so that's kind of. So that's very easy to use, and the quality of it too is amazing. It's a triplet apochromatic 2-inch lens. I mean, that's
That
amazing, and
alone, yeah.
that alone, if you bought a refractor that's a triple apo, you're gonna pay like $1,000 to $2,000,
Right, that's true.
so
What's
you're getting.
the focal length of this telescope?
It's 250
Okay.
millimeter at f5,
Okay.
which is pretty fast, actually. It's not an f10 like a Schmidt-Cassegrain. It's an f5, and what's great about it too is it uses the Sony IMX462 color chip, and I have the ZWO-ASI462MC, so I have the exact chip. So they're really using a planetary chip. It's non-cooled. The camera is non-cooled, and it uses that chip. And what else? It has a built-in dew heater, because most of us live in areas living in Florida. It's always humid, so you turn the little dew heater on, and it adds a little heat to the front lens, and it never dews up. And then another great thing is it has an IR cut filter, which is nice. And then it also has a light pollution filter, which
And these
is
are all built in.
fantastic.
You don't need to touch
These
them.
are all built in.
That's
Yep,
what,
these are all built in.
yeah, it's
Yeah,
amazing.
so the light pollution filter lets through H alpha and oxygen 3. So it's fantastic for nebulae. And so, I mean, the quality of it and what it has in it is just absolutely fantastic. And the only negative thing I can say is I emailed ZWO and asked them as they were developing it if they could put threading in front of the lens so you can screw on a 2-inch filter. Wow. And they wouldn't do that. It's smooth.
Right.
But people now are 3D printing little filter adapters that fit right into the front of the C-Star. Oh, and it also comes with a solar filter too.
Yep, it slides right in. Yeah,
first thing I did. That's what I mean. It slides right in. It doesn't screw in. Which is,
When I first got mine, I mean, I opened it, pulled it out of the box, put the filter on, took it outside, and I imaged the sun 10 minutes after I opened the box. That's how easy this telescope is to use.
Yeah, and it finds it automatically. Yeah. Yep. It does plate solving. It's just incredible.
The plate solving just blows me away, too, how accurate it is.
Yeah. And the autofocus, I never had to manually focus. I hit autofocus, and it is perfectly focused.
Yep.
I tried playing around with it, you know, plus and minus a little bit. The autofocus was spot on.
Yep. I get pinpoint stars with mine, yeah.
Yep.
Now, what are some of the different functions it has?
Well, I think I mentioned them, didn't I? No. Oh, yeah, the functions. The functions, it has five different functions. It has scenery, solar, lunar, planetary, and deep sky. Okay, so I'll talk about all of these. The first one, the scenery, you just hit scenery mode and then it'll hit a little circle that comes on and it goes up and you can, you know, for bird watching or anything, something like that, you know? So I experimented. I took a palm tree way in the distance and, you know, took a photo of that.
Yep.
It autofocus. So I really don't use scenery mode very much, but I do use scenery mode, for this, like the C-Star, it's at the very bottom, so you can't really put the filter on ahead of time.
Right.
So I use scenery mode to kind of make it to lift it up a little bit. Then I add the solar filter. Then I say go to the sun. So there's no way to really add it before. And they didn't include like a dust cap, which I didn't like. Either, you know.
Yeah, because when you turn the telescope off, it points down, which is
down,
near the base of the telescope, but the lens is not covered. Yeah.
Right, but the lens isn't covered, so there's still dust to get.
But like you mentioned, there's people out there on eBay that are 3D printing all these different
add-ons
for it too. And that's for like $15 on a dew shield and a focusing screen and other things just to
Okay, and then we talked about solar mode, and the solar is really nice because you can push a button and it takes a single photo of what you're seeing on the screen, and you could do a video in MPEG-4 and in AVI, which is RAW, and then in the AVI, you can put it through AutoStacker and Registax, and you have a beautiful, you know, solar image. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's incredible. And the same thing with lunar mode.
Right.
You know, you can put it, you can take a single shot or you could do a video, you know, and by the way, AutoStacker 4 is out in beta version.
Oh, okay.
So go to the AutoStacker website and download
it. I'll get that.
A lot of nice new features on it.
Okay. All right.
Okay. And so you got solar, lunar. Now planetary is the planetary, unfortunately, is the only thing that it really kind of lacks in. And it's only because of physics. I mean, it's only 250 millimeters
right.
and it's and it's f5, you know, and I try putting a 2x Barlow. I have a 2-inch 2x Barlow in front, and it wouldn't focus, so it's probably not meant for that kind of focal length, you know.
Yeah, one of the last updates, they added a magnification, the 2x and a 4x magnification for planetary.
Right. I was just going to say that. Okay. And all that is it's using less of the chip.
Right.
It's using, yeah, it's instead of using the whole chip, the 462 color chip, it's using half of that.
That's it's like a zoom, basically.
Almost like a zoom, yeah. But it's not really zooming optically, you know, it's just using less of the region of interest is less.
Right. So,
yeah, but that's a nice feature. And you can also take single pictures there, or you take video, AVI and MPEG. And I've taken AVI and put it to AutoStacker, and it comes out pretty nice. You can, even with a smaller aperture, you can still see, if someone's never seen Jupiter before, you can still see the belts and zones, the red spot. If a transit comes through, you'll see that. See all four of the Galilean moons of Jupiter, Saturn, you see the rings beautifully. And
yeah, it's like looking through a 2-inch telescope, basically.
2-inch telescope, yeah. So you can still see the planets pretty well, but it's not Alpha quality where you're going to submit them for research and archive, you know, like we all do with, you know, 8 to 12-inch telescopes, you know, 8 to 14-inch telescopes. So, and another thing I like about the C-Star is they have frequent firmware updates. Yes. It's usually at least two every month. So they're always fixing it. And they really listen to their customers. I send them emails, support, saying I found this bug, and they within 24 hours I get a response.
Oh wow!
From Simon Lewis, 24 hours. It's amazing.
Wow!
Like clockwork, they are really good in support. I mean, you know, I've had other companies where I send support and you forget you even sent the email. It's a week later.
So they've responded with changes that you've suggested?
Yes, they have.
Oh, wow. Very good.
Yeah, they have. So, which is really, really nice. Yeah. Yes. So that I'm really impressed with their customer service and the fact that they're updating the firmware. And also Facebook has a ZWO groups. That's the official one. There's several, but
yeah, there are several.
Yeah, there's an official one that is sanctioned by the company ZWO, and they watch that. Okay. Everybody's saying they watch what people are saying there, and they take it seriously. And I'm noticing one person is experimenting with trying to equatorially mount the C-Star, which is kind of neat, you know?
Yeah.
But, another thing that I should have mentioned earlier is, you know, the C-Star comes with a beautiful styrofoam carrying case and a tripod, and the tripod is carbon fiber.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have gone cheap on the tripod, and they did not. They gave you a high quality tripod,
right?
You know, and then I found out through that ZWO groups, there's a nice little leveler called Calvix, Calvix. Mm-hmm. It's on Amazon. It's only about $40, and it's got three different things, and it levels it really well.
That's one of the first things I bought for mine. Yeah, it screws right on the tripod head, and the telescope screws right onto it. And when I saw, I used it for the first time for night observing last night, and I plopped it down. It was out of, because the key with this telescope, you have to have it level.
It
can't, you know, it's got an internal compass and an internal level inside, and the telescope has to be level. So adding that on, I mean, within 5 minutes after I plopped it down on this table outside, I was level, and I was taking pictures.
And it has a nice thing where it auto levels it itself. It says calculate it. I press that, and then when I look, it's like within 0.2, 0.3. It's, you know,
right.
I mean, it's really fantastic, you know. And then the compass, you got to rotate and revolutions to get the compass going. And I always face it north. I don't think you have to, but no. I always do anyway. So I face it due north at the Polaris so that, you know. Yeah. But it really is an incredible telescope. And now its primary purpose, of course, is deep sky. And it is absolutely fantastic with deep sky. It has a wonderful star atlas, sky atlas that's built into it. And they said on the ZWO groups, you can even run it through Sky Safari, which has an even bigger atlas.
Oh, my, really?
Yeah, yeah. I haven't tried that yet, but the one that's in there is very, very good. Oh, and they also give you, like, the telescope, you need to have location on because it needs to know where you are in order to
the internal to GPS, yeah.
Accurately, yeah, the GPS. And it's just amazing the way it just – oh, yeah, and it has, like, what's up, like – right now, it'll say M42, M1, mm-hmm. you know, it'll give you suggested, you know, targets based on the time, your location mm-hmm. and everything. So that's really nice too.
And you just click on that and say go to. And
yeah, you just click on that and it goes right to it. Yeah.
The plate solving software inside, it looks at the background star, sees where it's at and judges and moves over. And, you know, a couple of minutes later, you're doing astrophotos. And when you say it's a deep sky telescope, it's kind of funny because it's only 50 millimeter. But but the method behind how it operates, so, I mean, if you want to talk about that too, how it gathers its images and stacks them. I mean, that's...
Yeah, it initially took 10 second subs. So it took an image every 10 seconds.
Right.
And what's cool is it talks to you, mm-hmm. imaging. Moving to target. That's kind of cool.
That shocked me the first time I turned it on. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and once it goes to the object and it press autofocus and then it focuses it and then hit and then it starts accumulating everything. And what's neat is the recent firmware updates, it was only able to do initially only 10 second mm-hmm. exposures. Now it's been extended to 20 second exposures and 30 second exposures.
Yeah.
So that's incredible. And it also has automatic dithering. Mm-hmm. So the dithering decreases the noise and increases the signal to noise ratio. So, I mean, it's just amazing what this little scope does, you know, for $499. That's the thing. And everybody on YouTube that's given a tutorial on it is just impressed and blown away. And, mm-hmm. and everyone in the ZWO groups that, there's very little negative press out there. Everybody's just so impressed with this little gadget. I mean, my mm-hmm. wife calls it the robot. The robot, that's what she calls it.
That's funny. Now, how do you think it would apply for people in the ALPO to use?
Yeah, that's what I thought of because it also has comets and asteroids within the database that are currently visible, which is really fantastic. Mm-hmm. And Comet 12P Pons Brooks, mm-hmm. it was out last month, you know, right near Vega. Vega's really low now, but it was a lot higher back then. And so I would go to that first since that was setting. And I would take, you know, and this was only when it had 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. And so I would take some images of it. And I was blown away after, you know, 1 minute, you can see the stellar nucleus. You see the coma around it, maybe a hint of a tail. It's a 8 point something magnitude mm-hmm. Comet. So it's very faint. It's not a very bright comet. But that, so I emailed Dr. Carl
Hergenrother.
Yeah. And I emailed them the images and I go, are these of any, you know, scientific importance or use? He goes, oh, of course they are. Any image you sent this. And he was blown away too, how nice they came out.
Yeah, because I talked to Carl a lot and, you know, most of the observations of comets that people send him are naked eye comets.
Right.
Even eighth magnitude comets, which are fairly easy to observe, he doesn't receive that many. And this telescope lines up with that perfectly.
Yes. Yes. You know? So that's how I thought that, yeah. You know, that that's why I wanted to make people aware in the ALPO community that get a C-Star, because, you know, people would think, oh, that's a deep sky scope. It's not going to do the planets at 250 millimeter focal length. No, it's not. But it will do the comets and the asteroids. It will image them very well. And what I found is you have to, for comets, don't go too long. I went, you know, like 15 minutes, and the nucleus will streak.
Ah, yes.
Because, you know, the comet is moving at a differential rate to the background stars, and it's tracking on the stars, not the comet.
Right.
But another nice thing I did mention was that it saves within, it has a 64 gigabyte hard drive within the memory, not hard drive, but flash memory in the C-Star, and it takes FITS files and JPEG files. And it also does dark frames and automatically, you know, includes them. So what you're seeing on the iPad or the iPhone or the Android is the stacked image.
Right.
Okay, but it takes every 10 seconds stacked image and saves it. So you can go back, like with Deep Sky Stacker is an excellent program because it has a comet mode where it will keep the stars pinpoint and the comet pinpoint together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's the only one I'm aware of. Yeah. So you can go and do it that way. Okay. Or you can just submit it after a couple of minutes. It doesn't streak that much, you know.
Okay.
And it's just amazing. And you can tell, like, you know, the degree of condensation of the comet, the coma, there's any tail, plasma, or dust. Well, these are really faint. But the nice thing about it is that these faint comets are not on people's radar. You know, who's going to observe an eighth, ninth magnitude comet? You know what I mean? Most people don't.
That's very true. That's very true.
But now with the C-Star, you can just, you know, observe it, and it becomes more of a joy. You know what I mean? It's like, what comet's out there? Seventh magnitude, eighth, ninth year. You want to see it, you know? It's not a big deal.
And the ease of setup. I mean, like last night I had mine out. I took it outside, plopped it down on the table, did the, you know, the calibration, and I was photographing in 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's
the
just
setup.
There's no polar alignment. There's none of that. None of that.
No, none of that. And what's nice is, you know, deep sky was the most difficult thing to do. I mean, you needed, you still do need like at least $10,000 worth of equipment. You get a 4-inch Apo refractor to get a big tripod to get, you know, equatorial mount. And then you need a guiding scope and a guiding camera and then, you know, cooled camera, and then you need to learn PixInsight and Photoshop and the hours you spend, you know, getting RG, you know, red, green, and blue. It's just monstrous, you know. Yeah. And a lot of people don't gravitate to that because of the expense and the high learning curve, and you know, it's frustrating too. You know, you don't get the best images when you first start. It takes a long time to get. And now this makes it so incredibly easy. This really is actually even easier now than a planetary.
Yeah, it really is. I've been an amateur astronomer since I was in junior high school. And I've never tried deep sky astrophotography until last night.
Yeah.
And I showed my wife, I mean, I had it on my iPad. I was watching TV, the telescope was outside. I said, hey, look at this. This is M42. And she just went, oh my God, you did that while sitting here? I said, yeah. I was inside my house and taking an image. I was just like,
oh yeah, that's another thing too. Yeah. That's kind of
the range.
The range. You could be inside your house. I'm usually inside the garage and I have it outside.
Yeah.
And you know, you're warmer, and then you're not freezing. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, last night here in Southern California, it was like 45 degrees, which is freezing for Southern California. So yeah. I went out there, set it up, came back in, and I ran the entire observing session from my iPad, not going outside once.
I know. It's absolutely incredible. It really and then the other thing for ALPO is asteroids like Vesta's currently out now between Orion and Taurus, and I imaged that. It's plus 6.6, so it's really bright, and it just goes right to Vesta. And for asteroids, what I would recommend is put it to like 20 or 30 seconds, because you want it to streak, because you don't know
you want to show the motion
where in the field the asteroid is, right? And the thing that streaks and everything else is pinpoint, you know that's the asteroid. Then you could take another image where it doesn't streak, you know, so you have everything pinpoint.
Do you think you could do photometry with this telescope?
No.
Okay.
I don't know how to do photometry, but that's the next step.
I heard another
Zoom lecture where people are looking. The AAVSO is very interested in these smart scopes to do photometry and variable star work. Yeah. And even spectra, if you put somebody put in a little diffraction grating in there, you can get stellar spectra. I mean, the sky's the limit.
It literally is with this telescope.
And not just the C star. I just talk about the C star because I have personal experience with it, but the dwarf, the EV scopes, the Vespera, the Stellar, you know, all of those scopes are fine. They all do the same thing. The big thing is the cost.
Right. And going along with the ALPO sections, I think the solar section too.
The solar section. Exactly. You can take sunspots and submit them. Yeah. And you got a whole, And even the single photograph looks pretty decent.
Yeah, and the eclipses too. I mean, I plan on using this for the April total solar eclipse.
Me too.
That's going to be amazing. So.
So then another thing too, I find is, one thing that's a suggestion is Tim, try this when you're imaging, right? You just let it go, right? What I like to do is after 5 minutes, I hit it and I take a picture. And then in 10 minutes, I take another picture. And then 15, I take another. And I was doing that with the Horsehead Nebula and the Flame Nebula. The Horsehead is so faint, but it comes out fantastic.
I was blown away by it. I really was.
Yeah. And then at 16 minutes, I took a picture, and then I came back at 20, and there was this huge satellite trail through it. So I went back to the 16, and the 20 didn't look that much better than the 16. So I used the 16 minute, whereas now I'd have to start all over again, you know what I mean, and all that. See, so take 5 minutes, you know, and then just use the one before that if you get a bad satellite streak.
Right.
Now there's programs post-processing that can, you know, get rid of that. But, you know, you might as well do it, you know, live and on site. If you do it every 5 minutes, you know, if you're at 35 and then between 35 and 40, at the 40-minute mark, you've got this huge satellite trail.
Good point.
Just use the 35, you know, and then, right?
Yeah. Have you experimented with different exposure times?
I find that I haven't had much success with the 30-second. The stars seem to be trailing on me, but that was with the last firmware update. I haven't had – it just came out today, January 5th, 2024. Mm-hmm. So I haven't had time to experiment with that. But the 20 works really well.
Yeah, I tried the 10 last night, and then I switched to the 20 – and the 20 was just so much better.
Yeah, it was for nebula especially.
Yes, yeah.
But you know, if you're imaging star clusters open or globular, use the 10, because what I find with the 20 and the 30, the stars are larger because you get that star bloat, the light spills onto other pixels. You notice that? The stars will be a little bit larger on the 20-second exposure than on the 10.
Yeah, I didn't deplete
See,
these
so
last night, and I started with a 10, then I switched to the 20, and yeah, the stars were a lot larger in the 20
a
second.
lot larger. Yeah. So if you're imaging an open star cluster or a globular, especially, you want more pinpoint stars.
Good
So the
point.
10 seconds, fine. Just go longer. That's all. Go 30 minutes, 50 minutes, and you know what I'm saying? And the stars will stay nice and small like that and pinpoint. So that's my recommendation. But if you're doing a fainter galaxy, like the Veil comes out really nice with 20. I tried it with 10, and then boy, in 20 it just pops. So you get so much more detail and it's so much brighter. And yeah, so with a very faint nebula, it's nice to push it to 20 and 30 seconds. And that's relatively new. It was only the prior firmware update in December that had that. So a lot of the images I took, October, November, were all 10 second. But even those were impressive. I mean, my horse head that I have was 10 seconds going for 16 minutes, and it looks incredible. I mean,
Yeah, I hear you. Wow. Okay. What else? What else
and
you got?
then another thing I suggest, if you own a C star, what I call celestial multitasking. What you can do is set up your C star, have it image, the horse head, and then go in and while that's doing the horse head, you can image Saturn and Jupiter, with your Schmidt-Cassegrain grain.
Okay. I was like, how do you do that at the same time? Okay.
So yeah, you can do it at the same time. Just set up the C star. It does everything automatically, and then you go to your Schmidt-Cassegrain and start imaging, the planets.
Yeah, one update I'd like to see them make is to set up observing session where you can put a list of items you want it to image for a certain amount of time. And then when it's done doing one, it switches to the next and switches to the next and switches to the next.
Oh yeah.
That
But you know what? Why don't you email them that suggestion?
yeah, I've seen that on one of the Facebook groups that someone suggested that, so I think it's already
Oh,
out there.
okay. All right. Yeah. And another thing that isn't there yet is the right ascension and declination, like typing in manually, like say the comet isn't there if you know the
That's
RA and that.
true. That's true.
And that'll be coming. Don't worry. I'm positive. I don't see that being that difficult a hurdle to
No.
overcome,
No, but a lot of times there's a star chart field that you can go to, and you just open up the star chart and you scan around that and you find someplace you want to look at, and you click on that and it zooms in. It's got comets on the star chart and everything too.
Yeah,
So
exactly. Yeah,
no, it's
exactly.
the user interface is too easy.
Yeah,
It really is. It's but the images and what you can do with it. I mean, we could do science with it in the ALPL.
exactly. And that's what I wanted to get across to everyone in this podcast. So you can do real science with this little $500, smart telescope for
I
the
paid more for
ALPL.
eyepieces than this telescope cost me.
Yeah, exactly. You pay more for eyepieces and other accessories.
Yes, yes.
Exactly. I mean, the price is right. You can't beat
Yeah,
it. It
that's
just
right.
really
And it's
is,
only getting better with all the software
And
changes
it's
that are
only
coming.
getting better. And they're really good with the firmware updates, and they really listen to their customers. And yeah, I see at least two firmware software updates every month,
Oh
like
yeah,
every 2 weeks or so.
easily.
Easily, yeah. So they're always updating and fixing it, and they tell you exactly what it is that they, did, upgraded, and then fixed known bugs and everything. And it's just.
For those listeners who don't know what this telescope is, I highly recommend you just go to Google and type in C-Star S50 and look for images. Just type in M42 and you'll be
Yeah.
blown away at what you
You'll be
see.
blown away.
You will be blown away by what this little 50-millimeter telescope can do in a 10-minute exposure.
Oh
It's mind-boggling. I will put a link for ZWO in the show notes. So if you're interested in looking at it or buying it, you can definitely go there and get more information on the telescope too.
Yeah. And then you can do what, and then you can take, you know, Photoshop, and there's this nice program I'm learning to use now, Cyril, Cyril, mm-hmm. which is a free deep sky program. And a lot of imagers are raving about it, and they're using it with the C-Star images. And then Deep Sky Stacker works for stacking all the FITS files uh-huh. and doing it the right way, the way, you know, a Deep Sky imager would do it. But you can just take the final, you know, stacked image that's, say, 55 minutes and put that into one of these programs and just bring out a lot of detail in that.
So yeah, I did it on my iPhone with the app, the photo app on my iPhone last night. After I downloaded it to my phone, I just played with the exposures and things like that on the iPhone without using any special software. And
oh, wow.
You can really enhance it just that way, too. I'm just, you know, I'm gaga over this thing. I really am.
I know.
It's so much fun to use.
I am, too. I'll tell you. It's
like just... I said, 55 years in amateur astronomy. I took my first astrophotos last night.
Yeah.
You know, it's like... Of a deep
sky
object.
Well, you did take photos of the moon and maybe a comet.
Moons and comets, deep sky. This is the very first time I ever even attempted it.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just, I know some of my friends that have known me a long time are just shaking their heads right now, but that's.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's really mind-blowing.
This is, and then this is also great for outreach. I do a lot of outreach. I'm with a NASA Solar System Ambassador Program. So I go with my local astronomy clubs and do outreach. And I haven't brought the C-Star yet, but my philosophy is if you're going to do outreach, if someone has never, ever looked through a telescope before, they need to do it with their own eyes first. They need to look through an eyepiece at the moon, at the planets, you know. But now you can have both. I can have my Schmidt Cassegrain, I can have the C-Star, and they can see it on an iPad, so they can see it.
Well, you do public star parties, you show them Saturn, and they're blown away. You put the same telescope on M42, they don't see it.
Right.
You know, but if you have the C-Star, you say, okay, this is what we're, and then they can see the images stack one on top of another after 5-10 minutes. Oh my God, that's what it looks like.
Yeah. Orion is so easy. I mean, after
so
1 minute,
it
just, it was like 90% there.
Yeah.
You know, it just filled in the details as you kept aligning.
It blew me away. It blew me away.
Yeah, it really has. If anybody's on the fence about getting a smart telescope, get one.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. This is not a paid ad. C-Star is not paying me to do this podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not paying Greg.
This is the one that we purchased and we have experience with. Right?
Yeah, Rick Hill bought one in the LPO, and a few other members have bought them, and they've raved about them. And I'm like, oh, if these guys are buying them, I need to get one. And it's just like,
yeah, that's good.
I have not been disappointed. I've only had it out twice. You know,
I've heard good things about the Dwarf too, which is the other one that's at the $499 range.
Right.
And I know people that have both. They bought the Dwarf 2 first, and then once the C-Star came, and they kind of play around with both. So.
Yeah. Great. Well, Greg, you got anything else to add on this?
No, I think that's about it. Do you, Tim?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Okay.
All right, sir. Well, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast today.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a pleasure.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Observer's Notebook podcast. I again want to thank Greg Shanos for coming on and talk about the little C-Star telescope. It's pretty amazing. I highly recommend you check it out on the internet. We upload a new episode of the Observer's Notebook every few weeks. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. If you do, please rate and review us. I really appreciate it. You can also listen to us on Apple Radio, iHeartRadio, SoundCloud, Spreaker, Google Play, Stitcher, Amazon Echo, Spotify, and this podcast is also now available on the ALPO YouTube channel. If you go over there, please subscribe to that channel as well. It really helps us out. You can help support the podcast by donating to it via Patreon by giving up to $35 a month, where you'll receive 1 year's membership to the ALPO and producer credits on the podcast. And with that, I want to thank the producers of this podcast, Steve Seedentop and Michael Moyer, for their generous support of The Observer's Notebook. The link for Patreon, as well as the link for the ALPO, is in the show notes. You can contact me via email at cometman@cometman.net or on Twitter at @observersnbpod. Until next time, my hope is you always have clear and steady skies. Thanks for listening.